As Anders made mention, I wanted to present today the background and the history from whence domain name, the DNS, came from. A little bit of history goes a long way to find out where we've arrived and where we think we may be going. Before domain names, there was a file called host.txt. And during my discussion today, you'll see pointers to RFCs, which are the Request for Comments documents of the Internet community. It's an online publication, and it's the primary publication that the Internet puts out their protocol standardization work. And I will provide pointers at the very end of where you can learn more about RFCs and the RFC publication series, ICANN, IANA, etc. So what exactly was this host.txt? A long, long time ago, in a far simpler land, and a quieter land, host.txt was maintained by Stanford Research Institute up in Palo Alto, California, as the Network Information Center for the community, and the ARPANET community at the time was there, not the Internet. And ARPANET was a Department of Defense-funded Advanced Research Projects agency. It was also the major funder for IANA, and Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, and also for Stanford Research Institute to provide their Network Information Center. Now, host.txt is a table utilized by a host name server. It's very simple. And it was machine-readable US ASCII text. A sample of what it looked like back in those days is here. This was it. Now, why is this so important? The names and the addresses for the hosts and gateways must have been registered in this table to that scheme and downloaded or transferred using file transfer by each individual host in order to communicate with the other hosts. User program to name server also. The cumbersome part was you had to either manually or have a little troll running around copying the whole file every single time a new host or an updated host was changed or added. But in those days, this was a very simple time where it was basically easy. When it became cumbersome was when the Internet arrived and started to grow by leaps and bounds after 1983. This host.txt became very unwieldy, and also it was hard to keep up to date in all of the hosts. So in middle of the decade of the 1980s, two colleagues of mine, Paul Makapetris and my deceased boss, John Postel, had an idea and developed this distributed database system that we know today called the DNS, which is the domain name system, to accommodate much larger scales. And I mentioned pieces of history. Here is a sample of what we have of milestones in the DNS timeline. And you can look up these RFCs and read more about where we came from and where we are today. And as you can see, even though it looks like it progressed pretty quickly, the year between 1973 and to even November 1988, these years are very, very old in terms of Internet. But it gives you a sample of what was going on, and especially at the very end when they were defining domain names, .com, .org. We had .mil for our U.S. military, .government. Int domain was established in 1988, and that was for the international domain. And the international domain means entities like NATO, the UN would nest under the .int. Continuing with that timeline was the network solutions folks and their InterNIC, which took over the operation from SRINIC in 1993. Also, commercial use started to become dominant. And the charging for registering a domain name became the way. And also in 1996, because Network Solutions, after a while, was considered to be a monopoly in the United States, there was an effort to begin planning for competition where there would not only be one registrar, but it would be many registries and competing. Now, what was the management and what is the management of the domain name? The IANA, which has been brought up, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, was the group, which included myself, a few other people, and John Postel as the project leader, which managed the top-level assignments. I did not do that particular work, but in the IANA, I basically helped with the port and protocol parameter assignments and other assignments on a technical administration basis, mostly the IETF assignments. But Postel was at the head of this. Volunteers were found to manage the other levels, and John was the person who would be the administrative contact point for .us domain, and also at the time, .edu. And again, SRI managed .com and the others, and int, and that was eventually transferred over to Network Solutions, what was called the InterNIC. Earlier today, I wanted to spell out what the difference is and what the relation is to domain names and IP addresses, because we do have a lot of users that say, I've just registered my domain name, jkray.com. Now, what's my address inside of that? I want to use my domain name to route. And it gets very, very scary because there is a difference. They correlate with each other, but the IP addresses are different. And people think just because they have a domain name that now that they can go and communicate all over the internet. There was and is an IANA policy for administering the DNS and the top-level structure of the DNS. This is going on since DNS was invented. The root has always been the highest level and of the system, and it is unnamed. There are root servers. The A root server is the primary one, which is currently being transferred over from Network Solutions to ICANN. We also have the two top-level domains, the country code TLDs and the generic TLDs. And as we discussed earlier, but need to revisit, the categories of the domain names and what they are, generic versus the country code, and they operate a little differently. The country code levels are registered by inside the government, or would not say the government, but the nationality or the territory, where in Sweden, if you really wanted a .com, you could go get a .com if you wanted to. Mostly, the generic top-level domains are open to anyone, where the country codes are more limited, where you would need to go to the Swedish registry, or if you were in the UK, you'd have to deal with UK registry, et cetera. And also, the generic top levels have been invented, and more proposals are on the way to develop additional generic codes. They've been going on for years, and it still hasn't been quite settled what will be the next ones. It could be .web, it could be .shop, it could be .art. The country codes are much different because IANA has always operated off of ISO 3166 and its also successor 3166-1 list. When someone has come and said, I am sitting in this country, no one is managing the country code, I would like to do that and be the manager and run it. A little different. Now this, when we call the IANA policy and the rules, this isn't just something John Postel was sitting around and deciding, I think we'll just do it this way. IANA policy is documented in RFC 1591, which goes back to March 1994. And most currently, ICANN updated that document, which is their IANA CCTLD delegation practices document, on 21 May 1999. So if you go over to the IANA webpage, and I'll give you pointers, or over to the ICANN webpage, you'll be able to find out exactly what is contained in those documents. Now, this is a multi-bulleted slide, but each one is fairly important. About the management of delegated domains, and I think this is a controversial topic. It was very simple when it first started. The simplicity was, if someone came to John Postel and said, I am sitting in this country, I would like to manage the country code. And John would say, okay, this is what we need to know. Are you really physically in the country? You are not sitting up in Illinois, the state of Illinois in the United States, telling me you have nothing better to do today. I'd like to manage a country for the internet. So physically, a person needed to be in the country. Secondly, where were your primary servers? Where were your secondary servers? We had an instance once with the Lebanon country code where we had a gentleman who said, Lebanon civil war, 20-year civil war is over. I want to be the CCTLD manager for Lebanon. I am Lebanese. And John said, well, fax us the information. We have an application. And we noticed when we received the fax that we looked up the phone number for Lebanon, the country phone number. It was coming in from the UK. The gentleman who said he was sitting in Lebanon and he wanted to run the CCTLD was at a university in the UK who had borrowed a friend's letterhead in Lebanon to run the country code. So Ayanna, in fairness, went back and said, you know, we have certain rules and stipulations here, and this is not one of them. If you are not the one physically sitting there to administer it, this was the simple time. Now we come to the harder times where when you are delegated new top-level domains, there is a lot more TLD manager responsibility, not just contacting Ayanna. And if you go through the simple steps of somebody physically in the country, and we can acknowledge that your primary and secondary servers are up and running, there's much more responsibility that the TLD manager provides fair and neutral treatment, that there's an operational capability that if something breaks, there is a backup. If there are transfers and disputes, and this also concerns someone in another country saying, I don't believe the person who's in charge of the country code TLD is fair. The IANA has always said in neutral, you two should go work it out amongst yourselves, and if not, then IANA will have to go and review things. I would say 99% of the time when I was watching some disputes go by, and John's attitude was, go shut yourself up in a room and come out with a decision, because it's not IANA's responsibility to fix this for you. Most of the time, they came to negotiation and settlement. But basically, there is the reality that there might be a TLD delegation that's going to be revoked, and also sub-delegations, and who has rights to domain names, and also we keep pointing out the ISO 3166 table. Something else that was a maintenance procedure is about the root zone files. So it's a much more complicated and sensitive treatment and politics than it was in the early days. We also mentioned, and I'd like to bring up again, is this domain name issues and disputes. There are a lot of people who were started to buy up, especially in the .com, .net, and .org, not the country code TLDs, started buying up common names, IBM, McDonald's, MTV.com, whatever, and they would buy them and then sit on them to see if they could find the highest bidder or the highest price. People would say, well, I've trademarked this name. You can't have this. But it would take years and lots of money going through courts to maybe find a settlement. This UDRP, as we call it, ICANN set up for Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy. It is an option. Right now, I believe it's $1,500 that you would have to pay out to go through this resolution policy. The average time is cut down much more than in the courts. It does target bad faith cyber squatting. And again, it only applies to GTLDs, not the CCTLDs. And there are four providers who will handle the disputes. An example I gave earlier this morning was we have a lot of people who want to use web pages, like the gentleman who calls himself Sting, the rock star. He goes by Sting. That's not his given name. But he filed suit that he had right to Sting.com. It went through the procedure, and what happened is he had never copyrighted or trademarked that name anywhere. So he lost his case. But a very smart woman, whose also given name was not Madonna, early on had trademarked Madonna for use. She went to the courts because there's a cyber squatter who bought Madonna.com and was willing to sell it to her, and she and her entourage said, no, I have by right that. And the courts awarded her Madonna.com. So just kind of funny but bizarre little things that are going on with this particular situation. Again, other issues about domain names was this monopoly provider of network solutions who at one time was charging up to $100 for a registration of a domain name, and that's not a one-time charge. That was every single year. You would have to go back and pay another amount of money. So John Postel in 1996 said we've got to start getting this competitive and open it up to other registries and for competition. And some of the prices start even lower than $10, it could even be $3 a year with the competitors that are now worldwide doing the registries. This slide, when we're talking about new top-level domains, again, it's the GTLDs. The ICANN board did meet in Yokohama, and on 16th of July, they set forth some new resolutions about what they're going to do with GTLDs, how to open up the process, how to apply the applications, the review, and who would be getting or helping with the registries of dot, maybe it might be a dot web or a dot shop. They haven't decided yet what exactly the new GTLDs will be or how many. The applications closure was the 2nd of October, and they're in process of reviewing the applicants, and the ICANN webpage has posted applicants' information about that. Something that has popped up upon the scene in the last year or so is internationalization of DNS character sets, because obviously US ASCII isn't the only thing in the world. But there is problems about how do you incorporate that on a technical level with the domain name system. Now, ICANN says, which is very true, it's not in their purview to work with trying to develop the technical standards. That's not what they do. They are coordinating and they communicate. But they are listening very carefully to standards bodies like the Internet Engineering Task Force, which does have what's called IDNS Working Group, and also other entities that are working on open standards and DNS issues, especially on a global level. Now, my boss passed away 2 years ago this month, but even if he had lived, I think the most interesting thing is we would still be in the environment and in the state of whatever you want to call it, whether it's confusion or evolution. He was fighting very hard to leave the entity called IANA that I worked with him for so long on, and also developing what is called ICANN in the best possible state as possible, in the sense that he knew that one person couldn't hold in trust anymore, though he did for over 30 years. He was the one holding for the service to the community the trust of IANA and the operation of it. And ICANN was sort of like letting the little birdie out of the nest. He was letting it go and was in process of letting it go when he passed away. So I would like to think that he believes that everything is going as best as possible under the circumstances. So in closing, I would like to acknowledge Andrew McLaughlin of ICANN, who is their chief policy officer and chief financial officer, for helping me with the slides so I didn't have to keep reinventing the wheel here. Dr. Vint Cerf, who's one of the founding fathers of the Internet, of MCI, and also, again, my boss, John Postar. And as promised, I don't know if hopefully this will show up, it does pretty well. Here are the pointers. For more information, if you'd like to know anything more about the RFC editor, what the publication series is like, I mentioned IETF if you haven't ever gone to one. IETF meets three times a year, and it is a volunteer global set of people who make the Internet work. And also ICANN and IANA. Thank you.
Thank you.